welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host today, Elizabeth Holtrup, and it is my pleasure to be joined by Kyle Owens. Kyle works as a partner at the Bradley National Law Firm, and today he is going to join us to talk about some issues from his past and current work. Kyle Owens helps clients in the financial services industry navigate risk and solve problems. Kyle represents banks, lenders, loan servicers, and securities firms in a wide range of matters, including regulatory compliance guidance, product development, and litigation and arbitration of consumer and commercial disputes. Kyle has deep experience with federal banking and lending laws and regulations, including bankers, you're going to be familiar with some of these, the Truth in Lending Act, Reg Z, the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, Reg B, and various state equivalents. He also provides guidance regarding state licensing requirements. Prior to joining Bradley, Kyle was the primary business counsel for multiple lines of business at a top 10 U.S. bank. Kyle, welcome. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Elizabeth. I'm excited to be here.
I am excited to talk a little bit about the legal work you do surrounding banking. I thought perhaps we could talk specifically about reputation risk. I know that's something that you're able to dive into a little bit. But first, I wondered if you could just share with us how you got into working with banking in the intersection between banking and law.
Yeah. So, well, thanks. So I was a financial services litigator for 12 years. Okay. And I litigated. I did no regulatory compliance unless there was like a statutory claim involved. And then I had an opportunity to go in-house. So I went in-house to a top 10 U.S. bank, to Capital mm-hmm. One.
Okay.
I'm in the Dallas office. So here in Plano, they've got a campus okay. where their auto finance business and their mortgage business at the time mm-hmm. resided. And so that's sort of where I got my MBA mm-hmm. in banking and lending regulatory compliance.
Got to do a deep dive business. Into that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did no litigation. I was straight business counsel for that and really enjoyed it, but found I missed private practice. And so I decided after a couple of years there mm-hmm. to go back to private practice. And I've been doing that ever since. So for the past 8 years mm-hmm. or so, I've focused on banking and lending clients. I still do about 20% litigation, mm-hmm. but what I primarily do and what I really enjoy doing is helping banks and lenders understand the regulations, understand if they breached the regulations, figure out how to fix it if they did, and do some new product development. So it's a lot of fun. We've got a large banking and financial services group, including colleagues here in Dallas, and really enjoy working with the community banks in particular.
I love hearing that you especially enjoy working with community banks and that deep regulatory knowledge, because as a compliance professional, so often we have to make that judgment call where we will tell someone we're working with that you really need to check with legal counsel. And as a compliance professional, of course, we're not going to try to pawn off a question. We'll do the best we can, but sometimes it just has to be a legal perspective as to something. And I love it when we can know that a bank is going to a legal professional who really knows the regulatory side of things and can help with the legal intersection with that. Is that fair to say kind of that's how you bridge the gap for banks?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it is sometimes you need an interpretation.
Yep. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the main concerns you see banks facing when it comes to current regulations, and especially if you're able to talk about reputation risk right now. I know we talked a little bit that might be an angle we could talk through. I'm hearing a lot of bankers talking about reputation risk right now, and I would love to hear your take on some of those hot spots there.
Sure. So there's been a lot of developments this year in that area.
Yes.
And to summarize, the prudential regulators have jettisoned reputational risk is a factor in their supervision of banks, mm-hmm. which is a sea change.
Yes.
From the prior practice, from previous administrations, mm-hmm. and it's leaving some banks kind of scratching their heads on mm-hmm. what's okay to do, what's not okay to do. Can they consider it? Can they not? Mm-hmm. It has advisors like me and you mm-hmm. wondering to what extent we can pull that lever or reference reputational risk, advise about it, encourage it to be considered where appropriate. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of activity related to that, and then closely connected to that is debanking.
Yes.
That's sort of the other side of the coin. A lot of activity about that lately, and I know we'll get to that. But the I'll go back and kind of give a brief description of sort of how we got to this with reputational risk. So, and I'll define it first. Let me do that.
That would be fabulous. Just in case some folks are scratching their heads.
Yeah. So it's basically the potential for negative public opinion about your bank that could affect its financial condition, could lead to loss of community support, could lead to a loss of business, and that could be new business or existing business. And the prudential regulators traditionally had included that as part of their examination and supervision process. And so they would look at things like relationships. Could be customer relationships, which we'll talk about in a minute when we get to the banking. Could be with vendors or other partners. Could be with products and services that are offered. It could be related to how a particular account or loan is serviced. And then they also reference social media activity. So I don't know why a bank would want to do anything controversial related to social media. That seems like an obvious one, but they do warn about it. There was a number of releases in the Federal Register or other more informal guidance where reputational risk is referenced. And so that's where we were. It was something people were very knowledgeable about caring for and considering in their management. The regulators certainly thought about it. But it became a volatile, controversial topic. There's a deep distrust among the conservative community about how this concept is used by the regulators.
And it has become a political question.
Absolutely.
In many people's minds.
Yes, very much so. And so you may have heard of Operation Choke Point.
Yes.
But that was an initiative in the Biden administration where the banking regulators and the Department of Justice sort of teamed up to disfavor certain industries. And there's probably two or three dozen industries, things like gambling or firearms. It could be coin dealers or marijuana related businesses. Where there was a strong disapproval, I would say, by the regulators, where, you know, it wasn't like it was an absolute prohibition, but the message was, if you bank with these industries, you're going to be subject to further scrutiny.
And would you say some of that was related to the concept that some of those industries were already potentially high-risk industries for other reasons, like BSA concerns? Or would you say that Operation Choke Point was a broader scope than just risk BSA concerns?
Well,
and you don't have to give your opinion if you're not comfortable on that.
So I think a lot of it had a legitimate AML connection to it. If you look at the list of industries, but that only goes so far. So, and that would probably be what you, someone defending that approach would reference. What the, I think there was the majority committee in the House Financial Services Committee. They did reports and investigations about it and said this is an abuse of reputational risk. And it's sort of like UDAP, right, where it's subjective. And you sort of have this concern that, well, maybe someone who is aggressive as a regulator is going to apply this amorphous concept in a negative way. And so
nobody likes subjectivity when it comes to risk or banking or any of those things. It's much nicer when it's objective or black and white. It's easier to deal with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Otherwise, you're sort of dealing with self-censorship in a way. And so there is this threat of scrutiny that was in the Obama administration. And then in the first Trump administration, they didn't get to it till the last days of the administration, but the OCC proposed a rule in January 21, where it basically said, if you deny products and services, you have to have an objective reason for doing it. And it's got to be some sort of impartial, objective, risk-based standard that you're applying. That never went into effect because, as a lot of administrations do, when the Biden administration was sworn in, They put a hold on all pending regulations.
Yep.
And so that got us to what we call Operation Choke Point 2.0, which was very crypto digital asset based. And again, we have House Republicans unhappy producing reports saying this is an abuse of a legitimate lawful business that is not allowed access to the banking system, which is obviously a huge problem for any business.
So that's how we get from reputation risk to debanking as kind of a bridge of a concept.
Exactly. And at the same time as that, we're starting to see some stories gaining traction in conservative media where there's a really prominent one out of Tennessee. It was a religious-based charity in Tennessee. They banked with one of the mega banks and they got a message that we have to close. We're closing your accounts.
Okay.
And so the head of the charity is a minister in Tennessee. He didn't, he thought he was being discriminated against, didn't credit the explanation he was getting from the bank. The bank would say, well, you were operating a small business abroad. We don't bank small businesses abroad. And you were doing debt collection activity.
Okay.
we don't do that either. And speaking of that, that's sort of one of the choke point 2.0 or choke point one industries. So the story from this charity was very different. They felt that wasn't legitimate and that got a lot of traction in conservative media. And I would say it was probably a direct result in some of these initiatives in 2025 once the second Trump administration came into office.
So now here we are.
So here we are. So in March, the OCC issued a notice saying we're going to remove any reference to reputational risk from our examination procedures and our supervisory guidance. And examiners are no longer...
And they put strike through, literally through the words reputation risk. Some of us downloaded the current version, and it's literally just that it's struck through.
Yeah, it was pretty funny to me when I saw the PDFs, but they literally, I think, had some intern go through everything and do a control F to find
it
the word reputation.
It did look like a fine function, didn't it?
And then they just struck through it. So they don't, you know, I don't know. That's one approach. So they didn't do a new document. They just took it all out. And so the Fed in June said, we want in on this. We're no longer going to make it a component of our examination programs either. And we're going to remove those references ourselves. They said instead we're going to focus on financial risk, focus on the safety and soundness, which makes sense.
And that's that's the bedrock of risk. I mean, that's bankers will completely understand safety and soundness.
Absolutely.
As an emphasis.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, it's camels, it's not caramels. There's no
good
R
one.
In there.
Yeah.
Right? And if you think about it, all these other risks you're supposed to be managing for as a banker cover the kind of things that reputational risk would be directed to. And so the FDIC chair, acting chairperson, he issued a statement in June that said, I agree with what the OCC and what the Fed are doing. This really adds no value as its own independent factor to safety and soundness. You know, scrutiny and management. And so we're not going to do it either. We're not going to look at reputational risk. And so over the, I think it was over the summer, Senator Scott, Tim Scott in South Carolina passed a bill basically codifying what the agencies are currently going to do to say it's, they no longer can use reputational risk as a component of their supervision. All right. And so then in, that takes us to August.
This timeline is,
yes, there's a lot going on in recent months. So in August, President Trump issues an executive order, has some findings. It says that banks have denied financial services based on political beliefs, religious beliefs, or lawful business activities.
The lawful
and
activity
going forward,
was key, lawful.
So going forward, It's going to be the policy of the United States that no one should be denied access to financial services on any of those bases. And so then he's instructed the prudential regulators to do a few things. The first is to eliminate, which they've already been doing, but eliminate any references to reputational risk or similar concepts that could lead to debanking. And then they are supposed to review their regulations and either eliminate or amend any regulations that could lead to people using reputational risk in an inappropriate way. And they, what it's really grounded in is having a reasonable and apolitical risk assessment. And so I don't know if any rules occur to you, Elizabeth. I was trying to think back. There's really no obvious rules or regulations where this is directly impacted. So I'm not sure what the agencies are going to end up doing there.
I know when I'm thinking about the different sections of the examination manuals, and obviously OCC, Fed, and FDIC are structured a little differently. But when I'm thinking about their examination manuals, there's no like obvious section. They never had a section of a manual that said we're examining for reputation risk. Obviously, it was referenced, you know, the OCC going through and literally doing a control find function. It was in there. It was in their manual for sure. But there weren't like, there's not a regulation, blah, 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 that says reputation risk. It's, there's some regulation B considerations, potentially, maybe Equal Credit Opportunity Act.
Yeah, that's fair. And so then the last thing the order says is that the agencies have to order institutions to, they have to conduct a review of institutions to see if they had policies and practices that resulted in, I'll call it unlawful debanking activity.
So that's then, the immediate impact to banks.
Yeah. And that's sort of whiplash too, Elizabeth, right? Because they've been told that if you bank certain industries, it's disfavored, you're going to be scrutinized. And now they're going to, the same regulators, mind you, are going to give them a hard time potentially because of doing that.
Literally some of the same field examiners, same ones who have been inside the same banks, are operating on different guidance from a different White House.
So that's going to result in some very interesting conversations, both within the banks, within the regulators, and probably in an exam setting as well. And so, and if there's religious discrimination, the executive order says you got to refer that to the Department of Justice if the agency finds it. And then the SBA is involved in this as well with the executive order. Sure, a lot of community banks have received the correspondence from the general counsel of the SBA. Then you've got to do a review to see if you turned away any borrowers on the basis of these inappropriate, unlawful, discriminatory reasons.
I've heard from bankers until reaching out and saying we would never have turned away a borrower on that. We have objective, you know, denial standards. And it's some bankers were quite confused and felt that there were maybe pointing fingers at practices that they would have not dreamed of undertaking. I understand that they do need to conduct that review, but some of them were puzzled how to even review.
I mean, it's a very fair question. And the underlying premise is a little odd. I mean, banks, banks want deposits. They want to loan money. So they're not going out of their way to turn away customers.
They want customers.
100%. And they're also not stupid. So we can, as the banking community, think about reputational risk ourselves. We don't need the regulator looking over our shoulder with their view of reputational risk and imposing it on us, in my view. And I think you're right, though, that it, it leaves lenders and banks in an odd position now about what are we supposed to do in response to this.
Do you have any thoughts or guidance or wisdom?
There's a few things, right? So I think even if it's a sort of a self-serving statement, I think folks should look at their policies and insert a line that says we're not going to turn away business based upon political or religious belief.
And now it's your policy.
Right. Yeah. And then you can, in your board minutes, have the policy approved. And so there's the board is supportive of the policy. So you have a couple things you can show an examiner when they come in. As far as the look back goes, that's interesting because I agree that there's not going to be any instances, I suspect, very few, where a bank is going to say, yes, we did turn away business based on one of these bases.
Yeah, I'm curious if there are self-reporting forms coming in saying, yes, we found evidence.
I would be very surprised. Yeah. You know, if I was joking with a colleague the other day where, like, for the SBA, whoever's manning that inbox, they're going to arrive every morning, you know, ready to get some hot leads for an investigation. And all these forms are going to say, no, we didn't have a policy and we didn't do any unlawful activity. So it's going to create a bunch of activity, I think, on the part of the banks, but probably not. It's kind of performative politically, I think, in my view. And it's a way to show, you know, a certain segment of the conservative community that, yes, we hear you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're taking action against this. Yeah. But I don't think it's going to have a real, I don't think they're going to find a lot, is what I would say.
I'm interested in the emphasis on religious discrimination because banks are not permitted to discriminate on lending terms on religion anyway. So there's already been some protections for folks in terms of religious beliefs. So like you're saying, I would be surprised if banks were going to self-report in large numbers that they were turning away like deposit accounts based on religious beliefs. Now, I understand there was that case with that organization that felt perhaps there were religious concerns, even though the bank perhaps felt that it was other concerns based on their transactional activity, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. But I do know this is going to be a top of examinations. The marching orders from the top down are you're supposed to examine banks for this sort of thing.
Yes.
And so I do think it's important for banks to have a game plan before the exam about how they're going to handle these questions and put a process in place to do some review that's appropriate for their size. That could just be the leadership team talking about it and reviewing some loan committee minutes.
I do think it could be an issue for banks that maybe have not had a strong procedures for documenting their denials, especially when it comes to business applicants. There's not always a lot of regulation that says how denials have to be documented. So if it's been kind of just post-it note in this file or a verbal confirmation with that manager, I'm not trying to say all banks are operating that way, but you do find sometimes that that's what's in the files. If there's not strong documentation, it could be hard to prove that the bank did not engage in this activity, even if they don't believe they did.
Yeah, I agree with that. The documentation is going to be huge. If it's, you know, I guess there's two ways to look at it. One is the customer who was declined. This is almost always going to be lending. Are they sort of do they fit the profile of somebody who could complain about religious or political discrimination? And if that's the case, then absolutely, you better have a really buttoned up, well-documented reason based on your objective criteria of why you turned away that business. Second, and sort of related, is your complaints.
Yes.
So there's a bit of a roadmap now on what language to use to complain about this to a regulator if you are a borrower who is rejected. And so to get ahead of it, you want to have that documentation in place to protect yourself.
I heard from a bank, just anecdotally, that their complaints program was looked into extremely carefully at a recent exam. I think this was an FDIC exam. And, you know, that's common. That's not unheard of. But it could be that complaints programs will just be scrutinized very, very carefully.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. And so, it is interesting to me when I think about this a bit where one person's opportunity is another person's reputational risk, perhaps. And there's still an opportunity, as I read it, even in the executive order, the door's not completely shut to a bank using reputational risk.
That is interesting. I was going to ask you about that, so I would love to hear your thoughts on
It's
that.
almost there. It's almost there. But there's some opportunity. I think you have to have a really good explanation for it. And the over the top hypothetical I'll give is there's some, the local Ku Klux Klan chapter wants to open an account at your bank. Now, they have horrendous, horrific beliefs, but do I really have to take that business? And what if the community learns that I'm allowing them to bank with me? Communities are probably not going to be happy, in most places, I would hope that that's happening. And so, can you connect the dots? Would that be sufficient for a regulator where they say, okay, we understand here, this makes sense?
If a bank says we just simply are not willing to be connected to an organization such as the Klan, is that going to be acceptable? I would hope so.
I mean, they didn't have that in mind when they talk about like First Amendment protected activity.
Exactly.
But,
Exactly.
I think I would hope there's some discretion there. But it should be an apolitical risk-based assessment is the phraseology that's used if you're gonna do it. So as an advisor, I'm curious where you think that leaves you when you're advising banks. Are
We've
you
been
gonna
giving some
reference
of the
reputational
same
risk anymore?
guidance you mentioned, so I'm very happy to hear that someone like you is probably on the same page as people like us. But we have been sharing that it would be a very good idea to get this into your policy and procedures, board approval, and make sure that your loan staff truly understands what this means when it comes to actually assessing applications. Perhaps that doesn't mean anything will actually change with the bank's underwriting and approval standards, because perhaps there never was actually at an individual bank. Maybe there wasn't ever actually any emphasis or actual debanking activity going on, but make sure that your staff actually understand what this means so that when you are reviewing applications, but also talking to examiners, you're able to articulate that. In terms of changing a bank's actual underwriting and credit approval standards, if they seem to be based on objective criteria, so often what we're hearing from banks is banks want customers. They don't want to turn anyone away unless there's a serious problem. And so often that's going to be based on, cash flow for a loan, repayment ability, which is objective standards that banks are still permitted to use. In terms of those, kind of fuzzy areas, like we really, really just don't want to work with a customer like this or like that. You brought up the example of, a terrible organization like the Klan. I have not heard from any banks that are concerned that they have an application from, a customer that they're just horrified to think about working with. I haven't heard from anyone yet facing that down. Maybe they will. I don't know.
The thing I would add to that too is there probably will be occasions where it's appropriate to escalate to senior management within the bank
I love that.
before business is declined.
I love
And
that.
part of that's going to be just to make sure we've documented this and thought about this the right way and we're not applying sort of these subjective reactions to it, but this is truly, it doesn't fit our lending policy for whatever reason, for example.
And honestly, some of this would come back to general UDAP guidance that we've been giving for a long time as well. Treat similarly situated customers in a similar way. Some of that is applicable to this concept of debanking as well, that you need to have objective standards and treat customers in similar objective ways.
Yes, that's very well said. I think reputational risk is still going to be important. Maybe not as much when we're talking about taking on customers or turning away customers, but the actual bank's activities, product mix, vendor relationships, third party relationships, I think there's still opportunities for advisors to point out these considerations. I think there's, it's important for management to still think about it. So, you know, if you have a product that's directed towards veterans or the military community or the elderly, you know, it's the, typically as a non-bank product, but like a reverse mortgage. Reputational risk is a real thing there. You don't want to be known as the predatory lender, predatory provider for those. So that's perfectly legitimate to consider reputational risk. It's where I see the regulatory scrutiny is when we're turning away customers or business opportunities, which, as we've said, banks are not inclined to do anyway. So for that reason, I think it's a little bit of a, I won't say tip us in a teapot, but there's some political window dressing going on here. For sure.
I appreciate that you mentioned that banks can consider reputation risk if it comes to something like how a bank is handling like service member requests, stuff like that. Those are aspects of community engagement where folks in the community might really respect or be displeased with how a bank is handling a certain segment of population. Certainly, it's very, very popular to protect our service members, for example. So banks are certainly allowed to still consider reputation risk when crafting products and services. They just need to be mindful of the debanking concept now. Is that fair?
Exactly. And then, you know, if you're going to use a service provider that's going to be directly interacting with your customers, for example, you're supposed to be doing the due diligence with them anyway. Right. But you could, you know, if you get into business with somebody who's has a poor reputation for compliance, following your directions, customer care. Please think about that. You're encouraged to, at least from my perspective.
Because customers are still going to have an opinion of a bank. They're either going to trust their local community bank or, you know, a big bank nationally, or they're not going to. And that essentially is reputation risk. It could have nothing to do with political debanking. It's about how people view the business and whether they trust them to put their money there.
That's right. Yeah. And social media, you know, there's, we could spend a whole podcast on that, but people get really riled up on social media.
They do.
You recall Cracker Barrel.
Yes.
Boring traditional Cracker Barrel was the subject of a firestorm for, I don't know if it was a week or how long it was, but they wanted to get rid of the knickknacks and change their logo. And people lost their minds on Twitter. People were weighing in that you would be shocked or even paying attention to it. And so they quickly backtracked, but it was not a good experience for them from a PR perspective, for sure.
So banks are still allowed to keep their marketing teams, their PR teams. I mean, this concept of reputation risk is, as you said, it's a little bit of a political thing, and it is maybe a little bit more procedural than might have actual impact on some banks is kind of a stance I'm finding with some banks. But in terms of marketing, image, PR, all that, banks are still businesses. They still get to market themselves and handle their PR. Is that fair to say?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And businesses are thinking about this sort of thing all the time.
Of course they are. Yeah.
They should be no different than that.
I think that's a helpful point. I am so appreciative of how you laid out not only the timeline, but then the considerations that banks need to be thinking about with this right now. This has been a such a clear presentation, and for me, such a fun conversation to have because I'm a compliance professional who deals with this. So I think our listeners are really going to appreciate that as well. Do you have any final wrap-up statements, advice you would give to bankers, final thoughts, anything to end up the conversation for us?
Yeah. So thank you. And it's been a great experience. So thanks for having me on. What I would say is huddle up with your team, talk about this issue, how you're going to be buttoned up by exam time on it, or you may receive like the SBA is sending those. That's a pending, I think it's January 5th, I want to say.
That sounds
is when
right
those
to me.
responses are due, something like that. So talk about it. How are we going to do sort of a good faith inquiry as an organization into whether we've debanked? So that could be talking to your loan officers. That could be in conjunction with your leadership team having a conversation about it. It could be going through your loan committee minutes. Sometimes I wince at those anyway. They're not sometimes they're not phrased great with the loan committee minutes. So just general reminder to folks, be cognizant of how you're documenting your loan committee decisions. But those are sort of the three, and complaints, right? But if you sort of hit those four areas to do your due diligence on what could be the scope of your debanking, hopefully it's none. I expect it's going to be none in 98, 99 plus percent of the time. Then you can respond when the regulator is going to ask you about it. Hopefully you will also tell them we've updated our policy. So that could be our lending policy. Maybe there's another appropriate policy to do it, to affirmatively say, we're not going to turn away an otherwise qualified customer based on political beliefs, religious beliefs, or lawful business activity. You got to think about that last one maybe, because there, again, the door is a little bit ajar still for reputational risk. So, you know, there, I just say, think about that one. But if you do those things, I think you're going to be in good shape.
I love that recap. I think, and I think that'll give some bankers some peace of mind, because I am hearing from bankers who are stressed out about this, concerned. And with that recap, just helping bankers understand that it's about reviewing, documenting, and basically providing resources to examiners to show that you've looked into it, potentially, maybe likely you haven't found anything, and here's how you're going to move forward. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate this so much. I had a really good time talking with you about this, and I appreciate the guidance you've given us, sharing your thoughts and your perspective on this. Thank you so much. Folks, this has been another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Elizabeth Holtrup, and we hope you'll tune in next time.